ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bottom of page 5253. The Thakur counts the next verse within the Abhideya division, assigning it specifically to chapter 13 entitled Aikantiki Namashraya Sarana Bhakti, Sarana Bhakti executed exclusively by taking shelter of the holy name. 2236. Sukadev Goswami Maharaj Purkit. Let me offer my respectful obeisances to the all-auspicious Lord Sri Krishna, about whom glorification, remembrances, audience, prayers, hearing, and worship can at once release the effects of all sins of the performer. So there's a worry how to, means to get out of the material world, you have to be purified. So then there's so many methods of purification, so many things that one can do to make oneself pure, different kinds of austerities, you know, charity, penance. These things are what purifies. Difficulty comes is those three, though they're very purifying, very uplifting, they don't remove the desire seed to do something again. Right? So they may have effect on reactions, but they won't have an effect on the cause of the karma itself, of the desire. So, and they're also difficult, right? They're never to be given up, but the forms of them, they're never to be given up, but the devotional service actually purifies and actually uplifts. Right? Does this make sense? So technically it would replace these austerity. But austerity also is favorable to devotional service. So then those aspects of austerity that are favorable to devotional service, those are kept. I'm not talking so loud today. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Favorable
means it's good. It helps. You know, just like, let's say, using a spoon in cooking is favorable, right? It helps the cooking, right? Or using a pot, or using fire. All these things are useful, right? Does that make sense? Okay, so then now, but when you do this, then this austerity, charity, and penance become redefined, right? Means you have your various levels of definition. You take one thing, and depending upon what level you're functioning at, it has its definition. Does that make sense? So in karma, it'll have one definition. Same thing. Karma will have one definition. Jnana will have another definition. Yoga will have another definition. Right? You situate yourself, right, in your process. So that means the karmi situates himself. He gets trained. As a brahmachari, he gets married. He situates himself in the house with his wife and performs his religious duties. Right? That would be your proper asana. Right? Does that make sense? In Gyan, that would mean that you situate yourself definitely outside of the house in an environment that's good for study and, freedom from sense gratification. You know, you can just focus on that. Then you can say you're situated in asanam, right? You're there with your books. You're there with association that likes to discuss those books. You know your Sanskrit, you know your language, you know your Nyaya, right? For the yogi, asana means he sits himself down in the secluded place on his deer skin, you know, in his particular, in his padmasana. Does that make sense? Right? So you can see is that it's different for each. So for the devotee, means he situates himself in a situation that's favorable for devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? So then austerity simply means following those things, giving up those things that are not good for devotional service. Right? It means Vishwanath describes that there's five levels of things, activities. One is direct devotional service, like chanting the holy name. That directly is spiritual, right? Then you have things that are favorable to devotional service, right? They're going to make it easier to perform those direct activities, right? Does that make sense? Then you have activities that are neutral. They're not specifically beneficial, but they're not, how do you say? They don't create any obstacle. Does that make sense? Like, let's say taking your bath. It's not specifically spiritual. Even birds take baths. Right? But it's helpful. But it itself is not directly helpful. Does that make sense? You know, because it itself is, you're clean, so then you're clean so you can do puja. But you could also be clean for something else also. You know what I'm saying? Then you have those things that aren't really favorable towards devotional service, meaning that they're bona fide Vedic activities, but they're not meant for your process. Right? Does that make sense? Like the karmi situates himself in the house, the sannyasi situates himself in the ashram. Right? So for the grihastha, so both of those are bona fide, but for the grihastha to situate himself in the ashram, away from the family, is not actually favorable towards his process. Does that make sense? Then you have things that are just downright not, beneficial for any of the processes. Does that make sense? Sinful activities, things like that. Does that make sense? Okay? Does that clear your... So, the point is here is that this is sadhana bhakti executed exclusively by taking shelter of the holy name. So it takes the form of sadhana bhakti, sadhana, so it's, but because it's exclusively taking shelter of the holy name, then only those things that are favorable for chanting the holy name are kept. Right? Everything else is dropped. It's not important. Does that make sense? Means in the yoga process, you have to do asana pranayam, right? So the devotee is just, you know, sits down in the temple in front of the deities and chants japa, right? So asana and pranayam are taken care of, right? Does that make sense? So the hatha yoga element of astanga yoga is not actually important. If you find it's useful for maintaining your health, then that's its usefulness, not that it itself is a spiritual system. Does that make sense? In other words, a devotee will perform it simply because it's good for health, not because there's any idea that actually this is spiritual. Does that make sense? Yeah, so then all these things are... Oh, so... These direct activities, those can actually get rid of all sins of the performer. It doesn't say sins. It removes the sins. Or it removes sin. That's what you'll hear used everywhere else. Nowhere will the Shastra on Karma Jnana Yoga say it removes all the sins. Right? It's very important because they'll remove the effects of sin, but they can't remove the root of sin, the seed. But devotional service is so powerful that all sin will be removed. Does that make sense? So even though it seems so simple, it's actually the most powerful and direct, which is generally the opposite of what we think, because the higher it is, the more hard it is, right? The more difficult. but actually devotional service, and the more kind of exclusive it becomes. Your paraphernalia, the persons that can do it, it becomes more and more exclusive. But devotional service, because it's actually going close to the soul, so all the souls are the same, that means everybody can do it. Right? And as we saw before, the animals and birds are included. So everybody can take part. So, for the jnanis, this is a problem, because they like things that are hard and they want to feel special, because everybody else is materialistic. We're getting out of the material world. So here you have a process that just anybody can do. I don't have to be a big jnani to do it. So they tend to avoid it, just because it's too easy, seemingly. But the difficulty is, the austerity is the mentality, the consciousness. Because the other ones, if you perform the externals properly, you get result. Right? You understand? Means, if your consciousness is good or consciousness is not good, right, you cook the rice gets cooked. Right? You follow the system. Of course, afterwards when you eat it, then you'll be able to tell the difference. But, does that make sense? It's a mechanical process. It's done properly. The mentality is not right. You still get your material result. What devotional service, then, the mechanics are there. If the intent is proper, you'll get result. But the more the consciousness is correct, the more the result will be devotional, powerful. Does that make sense? Like that. You know, the bird takes prasad. It gets agyata sukrita. It gets devotional results. But if the bird understood that this is Krishna prasad, then it would get a lot more benefit. Right? Is that okay? Anything else on this? No. Okay. Okay, the next appendix are just items of general interest that they are explaining the how you say? These are verses that are generally used, Prabhupada uses them They give the size that, here, the first one is the size, no more attraction. Only the purified soul can attain the perfection of associating with the personality of Godhead in complete bliss and satisfaction in his constitutional state. Whoever is able to renovate such devotional perfection is never again attracted by this material world, and he never returns. So someone who's purified, they can appreciate the spiritual, right? Because you're in a purified state. Right? Means purity can be appreciated by something that's pure. Does that make sense? Means you can only appreciate something that you have something in common with. Right? You have eyes, so therefore you can appreciate sight. Does that make sense? If you don't have eyes, then you can't appreciate sight. Worms aren't sitting around going, wow, you know, look at all the nice trees and stuff, you know. Right? So it doesn't happen. Does that make sense? So, in the purified state, then we can attain, here, bliss and satisfaction. It means you want happiness and satisfaction, because satisfaction would also mean that it's complete. Right? Happiness is there, so there's different, it's an experience. But that you're satisfied means in that experience, that means the experience itself was complete. It dealt with all desire, all need. Right? Does that make sense? That's important, because otherwise we do things that makes us happy, but there's something that's left out. You know, you think about it, even your best experience, you know, you'll say this was great, this, that, could it have been any better? And then you could most likely list ways it could have been nicer. But it was good. Right? But here it's saying that it's complete. So one's satisfied. So that's important, because that's something that doesn't happen here. Right? It just doesn't, you know, even in the moment, but after the moment, then the satisfaction's not there, because there's nothing to hold on to. You know what I'm saying? You can remember something from the past, and only if it evokes, the remembrance evokes some kind of emotional response, then you can say that element of it, it has some substance. But if you think about it, it itself, there's something missing. It's like you have it, but you can't hold it. You know? Does that make sense? The experience actually is it just evaporates. Like you see the mirage. You see it, but you can't take it. And so it just moves. So everything's like that. We're so used to it, we don't notice that we just have the next desire and endeavor for that. So in that endeavor, we keep ourselves distracted. But if you actually contemplate on what you have, there's nothing there. You're always trying to get something more out of it that doesn't exist. Does that make sense? No? Doesn't? Okay. For then bhakti yoga. Huh?
You mentioned that only devotional service can destroy all sins. I was just wondering how does the person who's attaining the Brahma Buddha platform, if they're not free from sins?
If they're not free from sins, means being situated in the Brahman is not actually a spiritual concept. It's a material concept. No one in Vaikuntha thinks, wow, it'd be great to be situated in Brahman. You understand? It's a concept of the material world. The Brahman realization and Paramatma realization, these are actually mundane perspectives. They come up in the material world. They don't come up in the spiritual world. So they are free from the externals of sins, the reactions of sins. And they're not performing any sin. But the desire for sin is still embedded in the heart. So that's why they'll come back from that situation. That you can't remain there because they never technically leave the material world. It's just like, can you say that the astronauts leave the Earth? They go up for some time, but they have to come back. So they never actually leave. Narad Muni leaves. He goes off and wanders off and goes to Brahmaloka anywhere he wants. But the astronauts have to come back. You understand? So it seems that they left, but they're actually there in the outer realms of the Earth. So even though they're in Brahman, they're actually technically in the outer realms of the Mahat Tattva. Because Mahat Tattva itself is actually Brahman. Right?
I mean,
means their consciousness is still here. They may have gone there, but their consciousness is here. Does that make sense? Right?
It doesn't make sense to me that you said the Paramatma realization is still mundane, because aren't you thinking of Krishna in the heart?
Uh-huh. And Krishna and?
Krishna. I mean, when you get to that point...
But Krishna and?
Okay. So you understand. Not exclusively Krishna in your heart. You're thinking of other things, huh?
That there, no. It's just... Okay, let's take it the other way. Is Krishna ever alone? You understand? So Paramatma means is Krishna alone. Like that. Technically, he's there with all his associates. We don't see that. The Lord's always with his associates. But Paramatma means you only see him. But he means his pastimes. So that's Bhagavan. That you can perceive that there's something more than mundane that's called spiritual or transcendentalist, because you see Brahman. You see the difference between dead matter and Brahman, right? Paramatma means you see that Brahman has a source, right? Bhagavan, you see that source is a person who does things, right? So that's what I was saying. It's not complete in its understanding. They're concepts of the material world, right? They're useful for getting to the spiritual world because they're transcendental. They're connected. But they are not in the spiritual world. They don't think about Paramatma or Brahman, because Paramatma is standing right before him with all his friends. Does that make sense? Okay.
There's no tinge of spirituality at all, because Brahman represents.
It means there is, but what we're saying is that it's not, the tinge is not what we're looking for. We're looking for something complete, right? Yes, in your milk, we did put 3 grains of sugar. You know, no, there's no sugar at all. No, yes, there is some there. And the milk itself also has lactose, which is a form of sugar, yes. Cool. No, you want the milk to be sweet, right? So just a tinge is not the problem. We're talking about the tinge of mundane. You know? Ooh, this milk is bitter. Oh, we only put 1 drop of Corella juice in it. You know, it's only 1 drop. I mean, it is, you know, 250 grams of milk. You know, it's only 1 drop. You know, you understand? Is that it's spiritual? They're transcendentalists, that they get out of the material world, but they're not permanent transcendentalists because of that touch of the mundane. They have to come back. You understand? You understand? Means this is used, okay, this platform is used when you understand the difference between matter and spirit. And then within spirit, you're telling the difference between, you know, more and more perfectional stages of spirit, right? If you're having trouble discerning matter from spirit, generally this point's not used. Because then one will doubt spirit. And it's all mundane anyway, so then what's the problem? We can just go on enjoying the mundane. We don't have to discern. You understand? This is a tool for discerning within spiritual, right? In other words, someone who only notices that there is a supreme power, that's nice, but still it's not personal enough. And then when you may realize that it's a person, you appreciate the person, but you still don't do anything. Right? You understand? There's no personal relationship. You appreciate them, but there's no personal relationship. So Shanta is not considered a great platform. Right? Not in Braj. Does that make sense? Okay? So therefore, the Brahman and Paramatma realizations are stages through which one goes, but that one does not stop there. So you're trying to get to Bhagavan. Right? So we're simply trying to point out. It's just like Mathura is more perfect. Dwarka is perfect. Mathura is more perfect. Vrindavan is most perfect. But that doesn't mean that Dwarka is, you know, not spiritual. You understand? Brahman is Brahman. It's spiritual. But what we're talking about is consciousness. So if you're situated in Brahman, but your consciousness still has the mundane element that I'm God, then we have a problem. Right? If you're situated in Brahman and you think, I am servant of Krishna, that's good. That's progressive. Okay?
So, Maharaj, Paramatma realization for the devotees, if we can perceive Krishna in a very tangible way and have a relationship, localized, it seems like that is an impetus to...
Yes, it is.
...know Krishna more, so it's okay for us.
It's okay. Yeah, it's quite tangible, it's developed, but don't think that because that's there, it's enough. That's the whole point. In other words, you have to strike a balance between being inspired to move in that direction and being inspired to move beyond that direction. That's the point. It's just like, you know, you're supposed to go to Mangalarti, so the first thing you have to do is get out of bed. But just because you got out of bed, you don't go, whoopee, Haribol, I made it, wow, pure devotee. No, hey, now it's time to get in the shower. And then, you know, we made it out of the shower, and yeah, now we're Mr. Clean, you know. So, okay, no, okay, yeah, you got the shaved head, yeah, okay. But now, then it's like, then you got to get dressed, you know. Then you got to get over to the temple. Then you get in the temple, then you got to situate yourself in front of the deities, right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is it's very good, but it's not the ultimate. That's the whole point.
But if we're thinking, wow, this is so nice, I want more, then that's good.
That's good, but if you think this is so nice and I made it, then that's not so good. You want to get to Calcutta, so when you get to Runagat, that's a good sign that you're going in the same direction. If you're going to Calcutta and they mention that we're just now passing through Barhampur, you got a problem. Right? But there. And then when they say, oh, now we're at Barasat, or now we're at Dum Dum, right? Then you know he's getting closer, but you don't think, wow, Runagat, and get out and go and sit in the tea stall and, you know, chat with all the people and, you know, like that. Does that make sense? You keep going. That's the point. So you have to be inspired to get there, but at the same time as you have to be able to continue beyond. You don't think, wow, I made it here, I worked so hard, and now let's sit back and enjoy the benefits. Okay?
Yeah, I found, like, personally, to meditate on Krishna within the heart is really good, because it's quite close and it's quite real. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes the whole, everything seems so far away from
mm-hmm.
our situation. So
No, it's good. It's fine. All we're saying is that if that continues, then we start to see that Krishna has his friends. Because that's the important point. Because to know Krishna, actually, we have to know his friends. You know, it's just like, let's say, you meet some very influential personality. So you'll meet him directly. You can talk to him, shake his hand and all that. But if you actually want to be his associate, it has to be along with his other associates. You know, it's not just you and him. He's got his wife, his family, his other friends and that. You don't come in behind them. You don't have a close relationship. But it doesn't mean that you can't deal with him directly. So that's the whole point, is that will come, but the next stage is actually to acknowledge his associates and to be willing to follow in their footsteps. Does that make sense? So it's a very solid, you know, position to be in, but know that it goes more with time. That's the point. Is that okay? Yeah. The substance we see, or the seeming substance, is the experience of having gained the item. Having gained the item, there is a euphoric experience. But the point is the item that gave us that euphoric, the gaining of that item that we got the euphoric experience from, isn't actually the cause of the euphoria. Right? It's that we wanted it and we got it that was the experience. The thing itself didn't give us anything because it's still sitting there. So why isn't that happiness still there? It's sitting on your shelf. It's been there for the last 3 years. So are you getting that? No. It was only when you got it, then that's when... Does that make sense? That's where we're saying there's nothing to hold on to, because the item itself isn't what got you the happiness. It was the attainment of it that got you the happiness. Right? Does that make sense? Okay.
So can you relate what you said now to devotional service?
Can we relate to devotional service? Devotional service, the thing is it is real. You're dealing actually with the soul and God. So that doesn't go away. That's the difference. You know, that experience itself is spiritual. So therefore, the remembrance of it actually gives a spiritual result. Because that's what we see here. That was the last one. Glorification, remembrances, audience, prayers, hearing, worship. Right? So if you'll observe, there is something different. You can remember, let's say you were in a very nice kirtan that was very absorbing, it really had an effect. If you remember that and actually get into it, then that same experience comes back. But if you do that on the material platform, then we see is that some you can get some emotional experience, but it doesn't, you can't, there's nothing you can do with it. You know? There's nothing you can do with it. There's nothing in, and the problem is you can only do that so many times and it starts to fade. The other one actually increases.
I suppose that if you're in the process itself, then you wait, it gives you just more inspiration to carry on.
Yeah, it gives you more inspiration to carry on. But I'm saying, but the other one, because it was nice, you carry on. The other one is that it was nice and now it's gone and I want again. The spiritual, it's there and you want to increase it. Material means it's there, it drops off. Then you want to get back to that point, it drops off. The spiritual, it's at that point, you want to add on to that, so then there's more. Right? You got 10 rupees, you went out and spent it, that was nice, now you want another 10 rupees. For the spirituals, you have 10 rupees, it doesn't go away. And then that experience is nice, you can get another 10 rupees. So now you can get the experience of 2 10 rupees, because they both stay. It works differently.
And do you get the level of pure devotion?
Then it's the same principle. That just keeps going. It never ends. That's why at some point you have to leave this body to go into a spiritual body, because this body can only handle so much happiness. Like that. It's not designed actually for happiness or speed. Right? It's got problems. Because just focusing on one sense then can be very overwhelming. So you have 5 senses at the same time bringing in ecstatic experience. That's more than the material body can. It won't be able to stay in one piece. So you need a spiritual body to handle that. Right? That's why until you've attained that spiritual form that it is inherited, it's yours, then only you can deal on that platform in this body. Right? Those before that, then they can only get up to so much. Does that make sense? But once they've attained the prema, then that form is there, then that experience will be done in that body, not this one. So that's how the nitya siddhis can come here, be in this body. But any serious ecstatic symptoms are manifest in that one. But because we don't have that one, therefore, there's only so much you can experience in this one. Does that make sense? Conclusion of Brahmarati. The great personality Brahma, with great attention and concentration, studied the Vedas 3 times, and after scrutinizing and examining them, he ascertained the attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, as the highest perfection of religion. So, religion means what is the inherent nature that can't be changed. So the ultimate element of religion is the soul's nature of being servant to God. So therefore, devotion to Krishna, therefore, is the ultimate manifestation of religion. Does that make sense? Okay. Sarvatma. O King, it is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. Sarvatma, Sarvatra, and Sarvada. Okay, Sarvatra, everywhere, Sarvada, always, and Sarva, all. So, in all times, all places, that's what a human being should do. They could do other things, but this is what a human being should do, right? Dogs, wherever they are, sniff, right? So, at all times, all places, everywhere, that's what they're doing, right? But, like you saw, that dog came in here the other day. The first thing he does is stand there and then sniffs, you know, check out what's going on here. You know, that's how it understands. Oh, Bhagavatam. Very sweet. You know, so, like that, right? Does that make sense? You know, so, that's the problem. So the human being, always and everywhere, is absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Okay. Okay. Then your homework assignments and that, and that, and so then do those, and then hand those into Shanti G here, like that. So we'll move on to the third chapter. Right. Anything else on that in the second chapter? Yes.
You were saying yesterday how the mind creates scenarios, mm-hmm. so that you can feel anger and hatred and mm-hmm. lust and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to understand how that is there a connection with wanting to be separate from Krishna, and the mind does that when you're not thinking, when you don't want to be with Krishna.
Oh, why does the mind do it? Or
yeah.
Why would the mind create separate scenarios? Because, see, it's a problem. Is just like this. Let us say you're not. Let us say you have a group of people, and they're not at all very good at something, and you're just a touch better than them at it. So that makes you superior amongst them. Though technically, you're all not very good at it. So then it's a. So that goes fine as long as you're with those people. But if someone who's actually good at it comes into the assembly, it's a problem. Right? Your whole identity, you know, how you relate to everybody, your whole existence is actually threatened, right? As being the most expert in this field amongst people who are not expert at all. Right? So therefore, when God comes into the situation, then the problem comes as us trying to be God, it becomes a little obvious we're not. You know? You know what I'm saying? So that's why the mind will have a tendency to find something that where God's not involved. You know what I'm saying? If the mind is purified, then it has it as then either is purified and therefore submits itself to the guidance of the intelligence. Then even though it may have other inclinations, it will take what is the right path, because it's already accepted that I, in the mind, because it accepts and rejects, it is accepted that I accept this spiritual path that's guided by intelligence, Buddha Yoga. So if the intelligence says this is the actual thing to do, the mind accepts it and does it, even though it would prefer to do something else. But it's progressive. But when the mind actually has a taste that that's what it wants to do, despite anything else, that's when it gets very dynamic. Right? So that's why at Ruchi, that's actually where you would say that is the, the archetypical Madhyamadikari. Because that's in the middle of the middle. Right? Means you have Nishta, Ruchi and Asakti. So Nishta will be the beginning stage of the Madhyama. They're situated nicely. They're in Naishkarmya, but it still has kind of the form of the neophyte, and that the rules and the form of it is important. But there it's the taste, and so the taste is the drive. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of using the intelligence, contemplating, because mind thinks. So it wants to check different things, because that's what it does, right? You know, somebody who has an activity that they're good at likes to do that. So the mind, it's what it does is accepts and rejects. So it constantly likes to have a flow of things to accept or reject, right? So that's why contemplation will always be there. So if you contemplate things using the intelligence to see that the mundane actually doesn't give what the mind is actually trying to get, which is, you know, a continuous favorable experience. That's what the mind wants. But the mundane, if you look at it and add it up, it doesn't work like that. You know, as we mentioned yesterday, so much hard work, and you only get a little bit back from it. It doesn't. It's not. It means it's. How do you say? Return is very low. You know. We're not even. It means businessmen do better off. You know, I get 20% profit, but in sense gratification, I think it's much more down than like the 1-2%. You know, it's quite low. So it's, does that make sense? So if you contemplate, if you don't think of anything else, then everybody's getting their 1-2%, and so that's considered good. Oh, he got 1.5%. You know, hey, that was pretty good. I only got, you know, 97% this time. You know, so everything's looking good. But when it's compared to what the soul is actually looking for, which is 100%, then you start going, there's something wrong here. So then we see his devotional service is offering 100%, and the material is offering, you know, 2%. So it's kind of like, if you use your intelligence, then you would say devotional service. But the mind is, I know the material, it's secure, I have my identity, I have everything. To go for the spiritual, I have to redefine all that. So if I don't want to go through that trouble of that, insecurity in between, then I won't make that step. Or it sounds interesting, but, you know, take it easy, you know, like that. You know, don't move too fast. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I've heard devotees, yeah, you know, I guess this lifetime I'll never make it, you know, this and that. Means that, you know, I'm actually, what I'm doing is okay, and I know it's not exactly right, but I like doing it. You know, and, you know, okay, ends up birth again, but I'll be born again to do the stuff I like to do, so, you know, hey, you know. You know what I'm saying? So then the problem comes is it's that drive is not there. They don't want to, they don't, that what's being offered, they don't want to take because they don't actually know the value because the faith is not that strong. Prema is defined as full maturation of faith. So actually the more advanced you are, the more faith you have. So if someone doesn't have much faith in the process in that, they're actually not advanced. You know what I'm saying? They may have been advanced, but they're not manifesting at this moment. Or if they've never manifested, that's all they are. Right? So in devotional service, that's not lost. That's why Prabhupada would be very, very curt on the point if someone, one devotee was criticizing another devotee, because point is devotionally they've done that much, it's not lost. So if you haven't done that much, then who are you to even talk? You know? Prabhupada had two answers for one devotee criticizing another devotee's service. One is, first do what he can do, then you talk. And the other one was, okay, you do it. I haven't heard of any other answers, but these are, there may be, but these are the two that stick in my mind. Because it's there, it's that, but if it hasn't been, then what's your position? They have done stuff. You know what I'm saying? They're sitting there with, you know, funny long hair doing their funny businesses, but they used to sit with Prabhupada, talk with him, do work with him, do things for him personally, you know, be trained by him. So, who else, you know, on their internet conferences can claim that? Right? Most of those guys never even saw Prabhupada, let alone be personally trained by him. Right? So therefore then, that comes into a stage is, that's there if it can be reawoken. It's asleep, yes. The position that they're in that sleeping position, that in no way you can say is ideal. But to put yourself as equal or better than them, you could on the mundane platform. But on the spiritual platform, it's, you know, night and day. They're so far ahead of you. If they woke up this moment, where they would be, they'd leave you in the dust. And devotional service only takes a moment to reawaken. The material perfection takes long, hard work. You know? So that aspect has to be factored in. Is that the mind then therefore is, that is the point as Krishna's making, it's our best friend or worst enemy. Best friend meaning that if it likes devotional service, there's nothing that's going to keep you from doing it. Right? If you like material things, then no matter how intelligent or everything it's presented, you'll tend not to do it. So basically, it all comes down to the mind. So intelligence is used to separate the mind from its mundane attachment and then try to attach it to the spiritual. But that's why there's a limit there, because intelligence is not the experience. Right? So therefore, that's not what's going to fix the mind. Intelligence is a tool, right, to get from one to the other. Does that make sense? So the whole point is we're trying to transfer the attached mind from its attachment to the material to attachment to the spiritual. So the intelligence is used as the medium. So you break down, you use the how you say, the vyapti, how say this, yeah, vyapti, of the intelligence to break down the material needs and desires and experience into its components. And when you look at it, the components aren't so great. You know? Does that make sense? So that uses there, and then in the spiritual world we put it together. So we see is that what I need here, what I'm looking for here, is actually found there. And the things that I say, I'm finding it in here, if I break it down, it's not actually there. So that's the technique that's used. That's why the system's called Buddhi Yoga. Right? You use intelligence to situate yourself properly on the path, to break down the attachments to the mundane, and to make that connection to the spiritual, so there's that interest or desire for that. But it's the desire itself, the need for it, that will carry us through into the spiritual. Because once we've actually gotten that taste for the spiritual, the intelligence actually doesn't have any purpose. Does that make sense? This analytical use of the intelligence this way. Does that make sense? It has no need. You know, it's just like, you don't need the knife when you're cooking the sabji. You don't stir with the knife. The knife is there for cutting. Right? So that's the whole point. It gets you from, you know, the whole raw vegetable into a processed vegetable that you can actually cook. But once the cooking started, it doesn't have a function. You know? Does that make sense? Like that. Okay?
Okay. Second canto, chapter 3, question 29, implied by Sukadev Goswami. Question 30, asked by Shonaka of Sutta. 31. Pratigya, solemn statement of purpose of this chapter entitled Pure Devotional Service, The Change of Heart, is directly given by Srila Prabhupada in his purport to verse 10. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of the different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone must therefore seriously take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation from material bondage. Okay, so, yeah, you see here karma, jnana, and now upasana. Right? These are the three Vedic viewpoints. Jnana means the fruit of activities, karma means the fruit of activities, jnana means the empirical, and then upasana means through the process of worship. But that means in the Vedas, generally, that's taken as worship of the demigods. Right, doing different things where you're actually worshiping the demigod. The karma will be the demigod's worship, but that's not actually your main purpose. Your main purpose is before the rule, it happens to be directed at a demigod. Upasana means that the worship of the demigod is actually the process you use. Does that make sense? So now what's being shown is that devotion to Krishna is actually the purpose of upasana, right? So all activities should be performed for Krishna.
All knowledge should be performed for Krishna. All worship should be performed for Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's taking us through these stages. Right? So then everything is cleared that the Vedic version is therefore given in its proper format. Does that make sense? Also, just as a note, here karma and jnana, you'll find most of the time it's karma and jnana. Sometimes Prabhupada say karma, jnana, and yoga. Right? But the yoga itself is generally categorized in karma. It's just another form of karma. One is through ritual, and one is through, you know, pretzelness. You know? Does that make sense? Because the first six stages of the Ashtanga yoga system is actually karma yoga. Nice karma yoga, but still karma yoga. So when you say karma, that includes the processes of karma and also of the Ashtanga yoga. Does that make sense? Yeah? Because otherwise sometimes you see just mentions two, sometimes you'll mention three. Like that. But also these two cover everything, because if you take them, your jnana is the functioning in the realm of sambandha. Your karma is functioning in the realm of prayojana. Right? Because jnana, you're trying to establish your existence as God. And karma, you're trying to get a result that you can enjoy. Does that make sense? Right? So the activity will go along with those things. You don't even have to mention the activity. Does that make sense? If you mention sambandha and prayojana, your abhideya is automatic. Right? Okay? Chapter 3. Pure devotional service, the change in heart. Adhyaya Prakash, the chapter at a glance. Nimisha, the Adhyaya Prakashika for this chapter is rather longer than usual for the study guide due to the importance of the material under examination here. It is less a chapter at a glance than an x-ray of the logical skeletal structure of the chapter. Having answered King Parikit's questions, question 26 and 27, about a duty of a sober person facing the end of his life, Sukadeva Goswami seems to turn back the clock by speaking of sensual people, karmis, whose hearts are set on enjoying a long life to the fullest. He says the Vedas direct them to worship numerous lesser deities like demigods, demons, and sages. To those who are akama, free of material desires, the scriptures send a different message. You kindly worship the Purusham Param only. But Sri Sukadeva will now have us But Sukadev would have us know that his two-tiered understanding lives only within the undeveloped minds. To use his use of the phrase udharadhi with broader intelligence indicates persons educated in Vedic thought, speech, and action. The lights of broader intelligence reveal the message of the Veda to be one for all. Human beings are urgently called to take up the bhakti yoga with great force, tivrena, no matter if they are karmis, akarmis, or mokshakamis. Nimisha, this is in keeping with a verse of high regard from early in the first canto. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes that a sincere seeker of the essence of Vedic knowledge must therefore be prepared to hear the Vedic literature like the Upanishads, Vedanta, and other literatures left by the previous authorities of Goswamis for the benefit of his progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless. Srila Prabhupada stated the same point even more simply indeed with the brevity of a sutra in Bombay on 19th September 1973. Jigyasya means Vedanta, Vakya, Vicharena. Vedanta, Jigyasa, inquisitiveness. To be inquisitive into the essential meaning of Shastra means to take an active interest in Vedanta philosophy. Hence, Vedanta, Vakya, Vicharena. Vedanta is the bona fide way of Brahma Jigyasya. Inquiry into the one absolute truth imparted by scripture. That is originally given by Vedanta Krit Sri Krishna himself, and taught by great acharyas in disciplic succession. Okay, so here's that where we're continuing with what we're before is that the element of intelligence in trying to find out, inquire why. So that is what's actually going to make us progress, because we want to know why it's like that. It means everything is asked. We're doing something we're comfortable in. Why are we comfortable in it? Because generally we only it's not a problem that we only question those things we're uncomfortable with, because there's plenty in the material world to be uncomfortable with. So most of our existence we're uncomfortable with. So that's okay. But ultimately, even what we're comfortable with should be questioned. You know, like we're comfortable in whatever material situation we're in. Why? Right? So then it brings us to this point of then trying to see is that therefore is all the karma jnana used in the Lord's service? Because here then the point is the broader intelligence, then one sees that whatever it is, it should be connected to Krishna, even if it's materially motivated. Doesn't matter. Right? Because the point is even in karma, then karma, you perform the ritual, the demigod is pleased with your performance of the ritual, he rewards you the activity, so it seems. But actually that demigod has to take permission from the Lord to give it. So then, why worship the demigod? You just perform your activities and rituals and worship of the Supreme Lord. Right? Jnana will get you to the Brahman, but that's only if the Lord, he is only one that allows moksha. So therefore, even if you want moksha, still he should be the one that you serve. So whatever it is, then that's source. So you go to source. Does that make sense? So, therefore, one must be prepared to hear these things. Then one can make actual progress. Because it's by hearing, as we've discussed before, what you hear, that's what creates interest, right? Because the mind, you hear, it's a sense that will be filtered through the mind, right? Processes is the senses are bringing in all kinds of material like that. I think the modern scientists peg it at about 40,000 bits of information a minute. It's a lot of stuff. The mind, therefore, depending upon what its interest is, it narrows it down to something specific. Then, the third stage, it goes into the intelligence and accesses the memory to see if what is being dealt with is what is favorable to what experience the mind is expecting to get out of this situation. Right? Then the fourth, it makes a decision if it's yes or no. And then the fifth is the mind gets the body and senses to act. Does it make sense? This is what goes on at every moment. This is how the mind works with the intelligence. Right? So, So that intelligence, I think we lost the point here. Oh well, we're over time now. Okay, so we'll stop here, because otherwise anything more will continue beyond, and then we'll continue on that day. I hope. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jainitai Gaura Premanandi.